This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. You can find us on Facebook, / The Taylor Report, facebook.com/ The Taylor Report. We're very pleased today. We're going to be speaking to Eva Bartlett, an investigative journalist, quite well known for her reportage on Palestine and most recently the armed struggle in Syria. And Eva has visited the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. Welcome to the show, Eva.
Thanks so much, Phil.
As I was saying at the top, we all know about your wonderful reporting in the over the past year, and this has turned out to be a momentous year in the struggle of the Syrian government to defeat terrorists and those who are supporting them. And you've been on the scene, and thank you for past interviews telling us about the situation. We can't resist asking, really, at the top, what is your impression of the latest victory of the Syrian army? How significant is it in Deir ez-Zor?
It's incredibly significant. Deir ez-Zor has been under siege for years. And ironically, you know, when all the corporate media were talking about Aleppo and the military siege that the Syrian army had placed on terrorists of al-Qaeda and their affiliates in eastern areas of Aleppo, the corporate media was making such a big deal about the siege and totally distorting the reality on the ground and totally negating the presence of terrorists. But with regards to Deir ez-Zor, you know, there is very little talk about the suffering of Syrian civilians and the Syrian military that were defending Deir ez-Zor but besieged. The media totally glossed over it. And I think that although I'm not in North America and I haven't been following the news, their coverage of it, I'm pretty sure they're glossing over this momentous breaking of the siege of Deir ez-Zor. So people can now have access to things that are being denied. Bridges can be rebuilt. Bridges, I might add, that were largely destroyed by the U.S.-led illegal coalition in Syria. Mm-hmm. So it's a momentous victory. It's not finished, but it's another nail in the coffin of Washington and allies' plans to overthrow the government of Syria.
Mm-hmm. One speculative question that I would put to you is, do you get the impression that the Americans, the British, and their allies are going to back off the desire to hold on to parts of Syria east of the Euphrates? That seems to be kind of a background sound we're hearing from the capitals of the West.
I can't really speculate, but my feeling is that the backers of this terrorism that has raged in Syria for years, for 7 years, they may not, they are not able to overthrow the government as they had hoped, but I fear that they will continue to inflict more damage and killing of Syrian civilians and soldiers for as long as they can, because they never cared about human rights to begin with. And I do believe, because Syria is such a strong in the sense that it has supported, well, has resisted this imperialist Zionist Gulf project to destroy the nation and to control the nation, but it also continues to support Palestinians. And so I think that, the imperialists and their allies want to inflict as much damage as possible on this amazing, brave nation, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, yes. This is Eva Bartlett.
Well, I mean, obviously, unfortunately, but yeah.
By the way, people should go to Twitter, Eva Bartlett Twitter. I've been doing that, and my gosh, there's a lot of information there. And thank goodness with the internet we can get authentic information. And Eva, now you, of course, have just done something quite remarkable. You've gone to what is called here, North Korea, at a time when there's really quite a frightening or potentially dangerous confrontation going on, once again, from a country and a people who are refusing to accept the dictation from primarily Washington and its allies. And the most horrible things are said about it, about that country. And you've gone there, and if people go to your Twitter account, they can see some footage. What decided you to go, and give us your first impressions?
I've been wanting to go to the BPRK for years, mainly because I didn't believe all the propaganda and rhetoric we were being told. I had a personal interest because I lived in South Korea for a couple of years after university, after our system, which is proclaimed in the West to be the great democratic system, left me enslaved, indebted to the bankers because our education isn't free. But at the time that I lived in South Korea, I was completely apolitical. But later on, as I got more aware of different issues around the world, beginning with Palestine, as you mentioned, Syria, and other issues, very important issues, I was aware that there was a lot of ridiculous and absurd and cartoonish rhetoric about North Korea, about the leaders of North Korea, and a complete void of any sort of human face. You never hear about the people. If you ever see people with regards to corporate media, Western media reporting in North Korea, Democratic People's Republic of Korea, these people are always seen as some sort of crazy military fanatic. So, I had an interest in going there, and I knew, obviously, like any thinking person knows, that the people there are like people anywhere, mm-hmm. except we can get into some of the nuances and how they're not like people anywhere, in that they're far more educated than people in the West are in many senses. Mm-hmm. And they're also, you touched on it, they're rightfully determined not to be decimated again if they were in the 50s. Mm-hmm. Anyway, back to your initial question, I had been wanting to go for years. A colleague of mine, Australian colleague and friend, Professor Tim Anderson, contacted a number of us, including my close friend and colleague, Vanessa Bealey, mm-hmm. and some other people, to go and just bear witness to learn from the people, as one should do. One should go and ask and listen and learn, not just go with assumptions. As it turned out, only three of us went. But anyway, we worked, mostly Professor Anderson worked on establishing the links, and we didn't go to a tour company, although I would have no problem going to a tour company, but we actually arranged it to a cultural committee there that was interested. And this, for people who are interested in going and are interested in going and learning, not just on the tour group, please contact me. I'd be happy to put in touch with the people that arranged this.
Terrific.
This visit, because it was for 1 week, They actually made it as inexpensive as is possible there, given that the country is under sanctions and completely isolated by the world, not of its own volition. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they enabled us to visit, the South, the demilitarized zone, which is an important visit, of course. And interestingly, just as an aside, a visit I had when I lived in South Korea and went there from the South, mm-hmm. and started hearing their rhetoric, their propaganda. The South Korean side. And also we visited a number of cultural institutions, schools, kindergartens, children's hospital, and then things that I think people might think, well, this is still, you were just a tourist in North Korea, BPRK. Mm-hmm. But we visited things like an amusement park, a zoo. And I know some people will immediately say, well, so what? Come out with the eating grass allegations or whatever rhetoric they've been fed by Amnesty mm-hmm. International or Human mm-hmm. Rights Watch and the State Department or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing about visiting those places, number one, they're actually quite highly developed. Like, I didn't expect to ride a roller coaster in DPRK, but I did, and it was pretty damn scary. But also, that aside, they're inexpensive. They're accessible to people, and there were long lines of average people, school kids. And we were able to interact with them and to a translator, of course, talk with them. Yeah. And so these are things like you never hear about the infrastructure. You never hear about the housing in DPRK.
Yeah, I saw an aquarium that if you go to Twitter, Eva Bartlett, look at Twitter. That's a terrific aquarium you visited. I mean, there's one in Atlanta like that where the fish go over you, right?
Yeah, it was actually, I know what you mean. It was actually part of the Pyongyang Zoo. And I'm not actually a zoo person because I usually find the conditions pretty abysmal and depressing. But for a zoo, it's actually very well maintained. Mm-hmm. It seems like most of the animals had very good conditions. Mm-hmm. And again, the day we visited, there were buses and buses of school kids, and it actually reminded me of when I was a kid and you would go on class trips
and you have your
notebooks and you're taking notes. So these kids were running around being kids, and it was such a human face, again, that we never ever get in our corporate media.
You know,
not only kids were there, there were military there, there were adults, couples, they're normal people, totally normal setting, really well maintained, and again, very affordable and accessible to people.
You know, the way that the DPRK is portrayed, frankly, you expect all the pictures to be in black and white, as though there is no color in the country. Immediately when I see your pictures, I'm struck by all the color.
Yeah. The buildings, even the housing that I've mentioned, really nice apartments. I did get into one. I'm sure they're not all the same, but very nice, modern, clean apartments. And from the outside, like very attractive, colorful architecture. And speaking of which, we also went to the Science Tech Center. Offhand, I don't remember the year it was built, but it uses, not fully, but partially uses green energy, including solar energy. It has a green roof. It has something like over 3,000 computers for children and for people that come to the center that is run off of solar power. And it was just this really wonderfully lit, clean building that has science displays, interactive, like our museum in Toronto, interactive science things for kids and adults who like to learn. But also it has a distance learning program for people who are not in the city or who are working or whatever. And apparently they can get access to the same materials and get the same certificate as somebody who is studying in the university, studying science. Of course, this didn't apply to certain degrees, certain specialties. But anyway, the point is this through their intranet and the e-learning, distance learning program, people can get education and get their certificate even when they're far away. Mm-hmm. When we were there, we did see, of course, children. Some were doing English language programs on a computer, some were playing video, watching cartoons. We also saw the library, which had books in multiple languages. And the people there were not only children. We also saw workers in their working uniforms or military, just normal people there. It's just one of many examples of really amazing public infrastructure that, I wish we had. The West has this arrogance in bragging about their democracy and freedom and, ability to be whoever we are. But we don't realize how programmed we are by our televisions and by our society. And, you were talking about color and how the media shows us things about DPRK, everything's black and white and drab. One little clip I uploaded onto social media, including my Patreon account, was I actually focused in on some women who are probably university age, wearing, the black skirts and white blouses that are common there when you're in school, but they had fantastic shoes. And it might seem like a trite point, but the thing was, it's not a drab place. People express themselves.
Yeah,
people are individuals.
You say they have a taste for high heels.
Yeah, it was just a little jab, because people think when I've uploaded some photos and videos, the common comments from people who immediately revert to their cognitive dissonance and assumptions about DPRK is that they're all robots, or they all dress the same, they don't do anything except work and whatever.
I want to thank you for among other things, doing what really all of us want to do and want to know is what's it like to stand on a street corner and watch people in traffic go by. And I was quite fascinated. It was really just you at an intersection. But what I was struck by was the number of people who were casually crossing the street, despite the light, making their way. This is not the robot society with the policeman telling you, you must do this and you must do that. They were, doing what they felt like doing.
Yeah, it is very, I don't want to say orderly because that comes off as robotic, but they do respect the laws there, and you don't see a lot of jaywalking, but you certainly don't see any litter. They're people, and they have beer, they go to karaoke or whatever, they go to restaurants. That's not to say everybody does it every night and they have nightclubs, but This is a society that has, I mean, I know you've had Stephen Gallen, an author who I have, as you know, a lot of admiration on, many times on your show before, so I don't need to repeat what you two have most certainly gotten into great detail about the decimation of Pyongyang and deep-directed North Korea in the 50s. But it was destroyed. And yeah. Given that it was almost completely destroyed and then put under sanctions and vilified, you know, one thing after another, the fact that they've rebuilt to such a degree and they have such infrastructure for the public, it's, to me, it's incredible.
Yeah, you posted on your Twitter, and again, by the way, please go to Eva Bartlett Twitter and acquaint yourself with all these things we're talking about. But you actually posted one today, a rather satirical piece by a couple of British, I think they were British gentlemen, but they actually lay out some of the grim history very well.
There are two Australian guys that I wasn't aware of before. I'm in touch with them, and I mentioned that I started a Patreon, and perhaps you and I can have a chat on Patreon because I'd like to start doing some interviews. Basically, because over the years I've made contact with many people, but in any case, these two guys contacted me, and somebody else posted a video, and it's amazing because they approach it with humor, it's light, it's snarky.
Yes. They went there for a haircut. They wanted to get a Kim Jong-un haircut.
Yeah, and that's one of the funny things they point out. And that's what I posted on Twitter, which I think you're referring to, is that, you know, there's this myth that even somebody yesterday asked me about this. Well, aren't people only allowed to have a certain type of hairstyle in North Korea, DPRK? And they were like, well, actually, you know, the origin of that myth was Radio Free Asia, Washington controlled information, and then it was regurgitated in corporate media as they do. And so what I posted on Twitter and more length on Facebook was, oh no, we haven't seen this before, you know, an article that was basically quoting unnamed people, and then that has resurfaced and regurgitated and being recycled in all sorts of corporate media. We've never seen this before. And then I put in the hashtag Leto Madaya, because this is precisely what they do with Syria. And this is so something that, you know, I don't pretend I'm still learning about DPRK. I'm really glad I had the chance to go before, because I was born in the States, so it just travel then would affect me as of September 1st, although I still think I would go. But anyway, I'm glad I had the opportunity to go. But it does astound me that people fall for this cartoonish and absurd rhetoric. It doesn't mean you have to like every single thing about DPRK or the leaders, but to fall for the rhetoric that we've already heard time and time and time and time and time again, from the 90s to Libya to Syria, like,
yes.
I can't believe people are so dumb. And this movie, this 20-minute documentary is excellent, because they're not at all insulting, but they get the point in, like, hey, you're falling for the same garbage. And you're told this, and then look. Mm-hmm. And when I was referring to television, and they made the point even better in their documentary about how our society brainwashes us, and isn't it ironic? Like when they go to some trendy area of Australia and ask people, yeah, you know, about the Kim Jong-un haircut, and they're like, oh, yeah, who would ever get a haircut like that? Who would ever do the same thing as everybody else? And everybody they're interviewing has the same kind of, like, trendy, whatever you want to call it, long-haired, which is fine, but we all fall for it in different ways. And again, you know, what I've been posting, all I've been saying is, look, I'm still uploading photos and videos. I don't have all the answers, but I'm giving you a glimpse of what I've seen, and then maybe you can do some research. And most people are quite grateful for, you know, alternative information or information from on the ground. Some people say, well, where are all the cars? Where are all the people? There's no people there. I'm like, no, I'm still posting. There actually are people. That's why I posted that video you referred to. There are people, but you know what? They also work, and they
play volleyball.
They have an incredible subway. And they play volleyball.
And they react like other volleyball players when they score a point. And they play and they're tennis. You actually showed them playing tennis. And I liked your ironical, what are they doing playing tennis? As you know, this is. It messes up the entire narrative of the West. You have to rip up the script if they're going to be playing tennis. It doesn't, you know, goes against character.
Well, some people are so adamant about their Western understood narratives, they say, well, this is just staged. You know, they just trotted these people out to perform for you. So that's why when I looked out the window and saw them playing volleyball, I was like, all right, you know, nobody's watching. I am. I'm going to film this.
But you know, I think the little photographs are the ones that work. Those choices, you made a lot of, I would call them artful choices. You said to yourself, now people need to see this.
Yeah. Because somebody, when I first started posting, said, well, we've seen all these photos. Every tourist who goes to DPRK or North Korea posts these photos. And I said, please be patient. One thing I haven't yet posted was a meeting we had with two academics from, let me just get my, I had it on notes, so I wanted to just cite them. One was from the Institute of Economy and the other was from the Institute of Philosophy. Mm-hmm. Two older gentlemen. And, you know, like they spoke, unfortunately, I won't be able to give you all the information now because we took in so much information, but they spoke about the different clean energy projects. And as an aside, when we're going down over 100 kilometers south to the DMZ, I noticed a lot of the apartment buildings and houses in the countryside, you know, off the highways, but in the countryside, had solar panels, and I asked about it. And I was told that throughout the nation, houses are equipped with solar panels. And part of it is to deal with the energy crisis because they are under sanctions. But it's also quite interesting that they're using green energy there. But anyway, these gentlemen, aside from speaking about technology, when we asked about, you know, the obvious question about U.S. CPRK relations, they said what, you know, school children we talked with in a high school we went to, or what women, there were a lot of impressive, very knowledgeable women tour guides, like we went to the Sci-Tech Center or when we visited the children's hospital. All these people had essentially the same message. Well, first of all, it was the U.S. who has been continuously aggressing CPRK and referring to, of course, the military exercises that happen twice a year. That even Canada, I didn't know that, but of course, I'm not surprised, Canada participates in these exercises, which are like war simulations. So, you know, twice a year, North Koreans or CPRK Koreans are subject to simulated wars again in the country, and they haven't forgotten the 50s. But they also said, you know, we and, you know, representing the will of North Koreans, we want peace. Well, it's not us that doesn't want peace. But we're not going to beg for it.
Great. I like the language. By the way, this is Eva Bartlett. Go to Eva Bartlett Twitter to get you can see some of this is available at that site, some of the footage. And, of course, Eva Bartlett is quite well known for her distinguished journalism on Syria and, of course, has visited the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. Eva, one of the questions that I think it was a student or someone you spoke to there said to, why aren't there sanctions on the U.S. On the matter of testing nuclear weapons, possession of nuclear weapons, threatening to use the nuclear weapons? I mean, you know, that's a very simple question, but that is the best question, as far as I'm concerned, anybody could ask.
Yep, absolutely. That was one of the high school students that I mentioned. I would say that was one of the most moving encounters, this group of high school students, because they were so earnest, what's the right word? You know, we were asking them about their wishes, about this, you know, this continued aggression from the U.S. They're just, I don't want to say simple, that's the wrong word, but they're just so direct and open. And they were saying, you know, they were specializing in sciences, so their focus was science. And one of the kids just kept saying, you know, oh, I want to meet American students in science conventions. I hope they have a chance in the future to exchange and participate in different science conventions and competitions. But then when we got into the sanctions, initially they said, look, they said kind of with the tide of DPRK's Koreans, we are going to be fine. We've survived decades of this. We're going to be fine. But then, you know, I rephrased my question. I said, well, look, do you think this is fair? And that's when this boy said, well, no, actually, why isn't the U.S. on sanctions? Of course, that would apply to Israel and the other countries as well. But But and then these gentlemen, the Australians, in their funny 20-minute documentary, they address things like that. You know, they kind of they're talking about historical facts, and they have a photo of Hiroshima. It's a bit like they're talking like, yes, the North Koreans are doing tests with different ballistic missiles. And then it says the U.S. has tested over 1,032 nukes. And then they mentioned, and they also tested on humans, you know. And that's the thing. It's just the glaring elephant in the room, or whatever analogy you want to use. It is the U.S. that has continuously invaded countries or supported proxies to invade countries. Mm-hmm. And DPRK has the right to have a deterrent. And, you know, that's another thing. Again, without pretending to know what's going on in the leadership, they have a right to be as bombastic as the U.S. is being. If the U.S. is threatening, they have the right to counter-threat. It's a deterrent. And I wish people would look past it. I mean, there's more going on than statements that come out of the leadership. And I'm not dissing the leadership. I'm making a decision. I'm more interested in the fact that they have survived for so many, you know, under so many
it's phenomenal.
Impossible conditions. And if you can compare it. And in fact, the academics that we spoke with did mention Syria, and they made a good point. And they said, look, Libya, Syria, you know, they didn't have this particular deterrent. They don't have a deterrent that will stop prevent the U.S. from attacking.
Yes.
And they mentioned the U.S.'s attack on Syria. So, you know, I presume they were referring to Hunter Putin, you know, earlier this year when the U.S. retaliated against their fake, non-existent chemical weapons attack that they supported the Syrians committed, and then they actually bombed with 59 tomahawks and fire attacks on Syrian soil. They said, look, Syria, they were not being disrespectful, so that they were stating the truth. You know, Syria, if Syria were to attack the illegal U.S.-led coalition in Syrian skies, then it would be hell to pay. But North Korea has kept such a, I don't want to say rhetoric, but they've made it clear, we're not taking any attacks. And if we do, you better watch out.
Yes.
You know? So people, instead of focusing on what the media tells you to think about North Korea, I wish people, and your listeners too, but I wish people in general would step back and think, why might they be issuing counter-threats?
Yes. Well, by the way, well, again, your work helps very much, as it does Vanessa Beely and Stephen Gowans and others. I think, you know, we're outgunned in the sense that the media will say what they will say, but thank goodness voices like yours are getting through. Lastly here, and I'll tell our listeners again, this is Eva Bartlett. I would suggest you go Eva Bartlett Twitter and get up to date on this matter that we're talking about. North Korea is called here. It is something that could be resolved were Washington less insane, less aggressive. Is it not? The Russia says and China say, why do you come to us with this problem? You have a ceasefire. You need a peace agreement. You're going to have to speak to the capital, Pyongyang, right? But this is Washington wants to pretend the problem is elsewhere.
You know, and I wasn't aware until I went to the DPRK, because I went there knowing the basics, but not a whole lot, and with my mind open to hearing what they had to say. And I didn't even know that in their 2000 and maybe 2007, there were peace talks, peace meetings between the South and the North, and there's a great will for reunification.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and if there's reunification, that means the end of, if the U.S. left the Korean Peninsula, that means the end of conflict. And I don't know at the time the reasons that these peace plans fell through, but I suspect strongly had to do with U.S. interference. I do remember when I lived in the South, again, I mentioned earlier, I wasn't very political then, but I do remember that there were periodic demonstrations against the presence of the U.S. military bases in South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of people, when we had meetings with people in DPRK, they were always talking about reunification. And I know how some people who have been overwhelmed by Western rhetoric about PPRK, they might say, well, reunification just means PPRK controlling all of the peninsula. And I asked our guide, Ms. Kim, I said, how would that work? And the basic concept, and I hope I don't botch this, but it's just that there would still be a socialist system in the north, and there would still be this open capitalist whatever system in the south, but there'd be mutual agreement. And there would not be any U.S. presence in the peninsula.
Yes.
And the other thing was that going to the DMC, of course, on either side, you're going to get a different story. And I do remember when I went in my South Korea years, back in the early 2000s, the mid-2000s, their version of it was, of course, the Western version, don't even look towards the border or the North Koreans are going to shoot you. We didn't actually get that indoctrination. We got a lot of history about how the North defended itself. And, you know, we went into the meeting room where there's, you can go on either side, and where they signed, they had talks, and we went to where they had the armistice signed. But the point was that there was an armistice signed, and my understanding is that the U.S. was instrumental in that not becoming a full-fledged peace treaty.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that, you know, there would be no need for any sort of, there would be no need for such an investment in military deterrence if there could be a peace treaty.
Of course.
I mean, why would the Syrian army use chemical weapons on people when it didn't?
Yeah.
Why would North Korea want to send missiles haphazardly into the world? It wouldn't want to. It actually, most likely, they just want to exist.
Yes. Yes. Eva, it's been great talking to you. We thank you very, very much for joining us, and we hope we didn't keep you up late. We look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you. And I would just, if I can, suggest people look at my colleague Tim Anderson has written at least one article. It's on AHTV. Just a very brief overview with some interesting insights of the trip. And also, I would encourage people to check out that 20-minute documentary. It's light, it's information-packed, it's called The Haircut.
Yes.
And if I can just say, again, I'm now on Patreon, so please check me out. It's still a work in progress, but hopefully it'll be something interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for all that. Of course, we know our listeners want to follow all these matters.